Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malkus again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Eric Hansen.
Friday is here. Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, along with South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen. I'm Sean Stiers. Darren Pritchett is with Notre Dame Hockey in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I tell you what, they have a barn burner going on right now. First round of the NCAA tournament. They're in the third period. The score is tied 2-2. Dylan Malmquist and Joe Wegworth with goals for the Irish in the second period. There was no score after the first period. Michigan Tech took the lead fairly early in the second, and then Notre Dame answered right away with Malmquist's goal, and then Wegworth just a few minutes later gave the Irish the lead, but Michigan Tech just tied it up in the third. Cale Morris, Notre Dame goalie, with 22 saves, 6:19 in the third period right now. We will keep you updated there. If you're a Fighting Irish hockey fan, they are over on Z94.3 FM right now. We will, we'll have updates on that. We're going to talk some football here today with Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune. Tom Noy will be here, and we'll talk a lot of hoops in the second hour. Did you get to watch any basketball games last night, Eric?
I watched a little bit of the Loyola game. I watched a little bit of Florida State Gonzaga until I was convinced that Gonzaga was going to not get to the Final Four, which was one of my predictions.
That's right.
And I watched a little Kentucky-Kansas State.
That was, it wasn't the prettiest game, but it was a nice competitive game. Essentially, both of the close games were in Atlanta, with Loyola and Nevada going up first, and Loyola winning by a point, and then the Kansas State-Kentucky game after that. They were both there, and then in the other one, they were both blowouts. Michigan just routing Texas A&M. I couldn't believe that score.
Yeah. Notre Dame just went up 3-2 on a power play goal by Jordan Gross.
All right. Excellent. You can keep an eye on that if you don't mind, and I'll keep an eye on all the other stuff in the control center here if you don't mind. Okay.
I'll be the hockey guy today.
Yeah, baby.
Darren would be very proud.
He would. He would. He'd be proud of both of us. We've got Notre Dame women in the Sweet 16, and we'll talk about that a little bit later this hour as well. Notre Dame's Pro Day. I've got a question I'm going to pose to Eric regarding Pro Day. And he talked one-on-one with Mike Mayock from NFL Network yesterday, and you'll get to hear that interview. But I've got a question coming up here in 20 minutes or so I'm going to pose to Eric. It won't be too challenging or anything, but I'm interested to hear what your answer is. And, of course, we've got more March Madness from Westwood One beginning at 7 o'clock here tonight on 96.1 WSBT. Four more Sweet 16 games, starting with Clemson out of the ACC against the Big 12 champion Kansas. That is at 7:07. It'll tip off right after Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. West Virginia from the Big 12 against Villanova from the Big East. That one is in Boston. It'll tip off at about 7:27. Then you've got Syracuse and Duke, a couple of ACC teams after the Kansas-Clemson game in Omaha. And the other one in Boston, Purdue against Texas Tech. It's amazing how just wrecked the whole left side of the bracket is. And the right side is fairly intact. You've got two number one seeds, Kansas and Villanova there. Two number two seeds, Duke and Purdue. A number three seed in Texas Tech. A couple five seeds remaining. And then, of course, Syracuse being the party crasher, the only real party crasher on that side of the bracket. But great game last night as the Sister Jeans of Loyola Chicago kept on trucking last night with their win over Nevada. Let's talk some football. What do you think?
I'll go there.
All right. Well, we were both over at Notre Dame for quite a bit of time yesterday. You got to, and I know you talked with Darren about some of this yesterday, you got to watch some practice, and we'll get to watch a full practice tomorrow. So interested to see kind of what we get to see out there tomorrow. And then stayed on for Pro Day, which we'll talk about later as well. But also got to talk to four different assistant coaches yesterday. The coordinators got to come out and talk to the media for a little bit. Offensive coordinator Chip Long, defensive coordinator Clark Lee, special teams coordinator Brian Polian, and then assistant head coach Mike Elston also came out. So all four of them. And thought we'd hear a little bit from the offensive and defensive coordinators first of all. Chip Long, in his second season as offensive coordinator, a lot of things that he has to address. This year, it's more on the offensive side, I think, that things need to be addressed, even though there was install of some new things last year for Chip Long and Brian Kelly with the offense. There's more turnover this year for the offense and Chip Long. He was talking about how much more competitive things are this spring, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, one, you lose your top leading rusher, Josh Adams. You lose your leading receiver in Equanimeous St. Brown, even though maybe that's with an asterisk or a caveat because things were just so up and down with the receivers last year. And then you also, of course, lose arguably the two best offensive linemen at Notre Dame, at least in the past 20, 25 years or so. So there's some competition for those spots going on right now.
Yeah, and, I think early on, as we look at it, Chip's pretty happy with the way things are evolving. The thing, you kind of want to get an idea of who you can trust, who you're going to see consistency from, and that's a changing snapshot each day. Mm-hmm. He mentioned Chase Claypool of having two really good days, putting two days together. I think that's really important. I think it's important that they get to the end of spring and they're talking about Chase Claypool in those kind of terms. In the running backs, Jafar Armstrong's kind of the wild card there because he's playing two positions. We've seen some, and they've talked about some. I'm trying to do this not violating. We're not allowed to talk about
specifics. I was doing the same thing when I was talking, yeah.
Okay, so there's a theory that there will be a lot of two running back sets when Jafar Armstrong's in the game. So, and the fact that he's such a good receiver, it's interesting to see how they're going to use him. The tight ends, I think they've got to be pretty excited about. And I think that fifth offensive lineman, especially with, my goodness, McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson keep going to practice. So they're getting an extra couple set of eyes to really help things along there. And mm-hmm. I think they're going to come out with a good solution there. I think the one caveat I would say there is, they may not have all the kinks kind of worked out when they start up against Michigan. That's a difficult opener for an offensive line.
Yeah.
For even if you had Nelson and McGlinchey back, that would still be a challenge for, because Michigan's defense is just so good. So that's going to be interesting. But all these things around the quarterbacks seem to be evolving in the right direction.
Well, let's hear from Chip Long talking about what he sees as his priorities heading into this spring, considering the turnover that he has.
I just want to get a real good evaluation on the young guys, kind of, so I know what I have and don't have going into fall camp, and I can start moving the pieces around. I want to see guys who can play tough, play physical. See if they're tougher than they were last year. See if they're making that growth, and then we got to make some changes to try to figure out ways to get them tougher in the summer, where they can play and play at a high level all the time. Get an evaluation with the young guys, what they can do and do well, and especially the young guys up front. Moving guys around, just seeing certain things. I'm not a real big believer in if a certain guy's been there a long time, that's where he should be. I think that builds complacency, and I want guys competing and earn it and get our best five out there, especially up front. Some good competition now. It's really better competition than we ever had last year, I can tell you that. Last year's team was special, but this year's team was probably way more competitive overall as a group than I've seen in the first 4 days, and that's really, really, really made me happy.
So you think Sam Mustipher has anything to worry about then? I'm joking, of course. But, you know, like he said, don't want to have those guys building complacency. But at the same time, there really are very few spots other than Mustipher where you've got someone who's been in the same spot for a long time.
Right. Mustipher's been in the spot for same spot for 3 years. Yeah. So that's comforting. Alex Barr's now in his second year on the right side of the line. I think they feel pretty good about him, too. I think it would be difficult to lose either of those guys to a long-term injury. Even though Trevor Rulen is playing at a high level, Mustipher is just mentally and physically just so good right now. And Barrs, I think, has an elite ceiling to him, and I think we're going to see that this year.
Let me ask you this. Do you think I think more people are focused on the quarterback situation, even though you have a quarterback who accounted for 30 touchdowns. Yeah, he struggled as a passer, and we'll get to that in a second. But do you think that the bigger question, though, is what's going on there or what's going on with the left side of the offensive line?
I think it's with the quarterbacks, to be honest with you.
Do you?
I think the left side of the line, you know, Hainsey, I just don't know how much growing pains there will be as a starting left tackle. You know, we saw as good as Nelson and McGlinchey were in 2017 and 2016, there were hiccups for both of them. And
that's kind of where was my point by asking that.
Right. But I still think that with this team, the quarterback has to transcend all this newness around him. Last year, Brandon had just about everything you want around him other than, a receiving core that was ideal. Had he had the 2015 set of receivers, last year would have would have been an easier transition for him. But he had this great offensive line, had great running backs. But I still think that quarterback play is the missing piece. I think, you know, I don't expect teams to go charging through the left side of the line and hit him from, you know, in his backside. The other thing is he's got to be more aware of that backside rush as well.
Yeah.
You know, the really good quarterbacks can sense that pressure coming and they instinctively step up or step back or start scrambling. He's going to have to do that. I still think it's the biggest thing on this team. When you look at the biggest separation from Notre Dame being a playoff team, it was the passing efficiency number, because that's one of the metrics that show up with every national champion. Is there's never been anybody that's lower than, I want to say, 37, and there's only been a couple of teams in the 30s. Everybody else is like top 20 in that category, and Notre Dame was, as a team, in the hundreds, and that's so far away from where you need to be.
Astronomically, yeah.
Yeah. Now, there are teams that turn it around in 1 year, and quarterbacks individually that turn around 1 year, and we saw one of those in Notre Dame Stadium and Jonathan Wolford, who went from 107th to top 10 in 1 year from junior to senior year.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Mackenzie Melton do it for UCF, an undefeated UCF team. He went from the hundreds individually to number two. He was behind only Baker Mayfield. So that's possible to make dramatic improvement over 1 year as a second-year starter. But I still think, as cliche as it is, I think the quarterback is still where Notre Dame, where I would want to see the dramatic improvement if I had to pick one or the other.
Hard to disagree with that. So how are they going to get that improvement? How do you make a 49% passer? How do you get him closer to 60%? And we've all seen the disconnect. Anyone who's been able to see practice saw the disconnect between what was going on in practices compared to what happened on Saturdays for Notre Dame last season with Brandon Wimbush. So Eric asked Chip Long the question yesterday, can you simulate game speed for quarterbacks in practice. And here's Chip Long's answer.
You can't. I mean, try to, you know, right now, third down situations, a lot of pressure, you know, but you still can't simulate getting hit.
Right.
And that's hard as a young quarterback. You know, you usually have to take a year to understand how to play when you're getting hit, when things aren't going well. And that's what's exciting to see in the growth in both those guys right now. And then, you know, spring game, trying to get them out in front of the fans. You still can't get an idea. For the first time, you take one in the chin and get up and have to do it again. So, you know, you talk about it and you keep challenging them, and they know. They see it. They feel it. And that's what's special about that position.
So there's the short answer and the explanation. You can't. So what can you hope for? I think that kind of leaves us all kind of sitting here scratching our heads going, no matter what we see right now, nothing matters until they line up next September against Michigan, right? I mean.
Yeah. I think you do the best that you can. I asked that question. I was a little bit surprised by his answer. I thought he'd tap dance a little bit more, but he was very direct in saying that you can't. And so... But I think there are hints that you can get that you're moving in the right direction when you do simulate the pressure, when you do bring the pressure. But yeah, and that's another reason why you want two quarterbacks ready to go. And that's why Brian Kelly said right from the get-go, quote unquote, we've got to develop both of these guys. And so, I think that's a good sound philosophy, but it was interesting that he was that candid about how difficult that is to be able to simulate.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat with South Bend Tribune Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen. I'm Sean Steyers, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Now, Clark Lee, the new defensive coordinator, talked a little bit yesterday as well. Of course, he was the linebacker coach with Mike Elko, came with him to Notre Dame from Wake Forest. And so now... he is in his first season as defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. First season as defensive coordinator anywhere. So what's the biggest adjustment for Lee being a coordinator now?
It's just constantly fighting to have a big picture perspective. Day-to-day, you know, when you're preparing a position group, you can see things out of a straw. You can, you know, focus on just the little details that you need for the group to have success. You know, in this role, you're overseeing a lot more. And so, you know, I want to make sure the defense practices in a manner that Coach Kelly likes, that he wants. And so, you know, thinking about what I need to communicate to the players in that respect, or to the coaches in that respect, you know, preparing practice becomes different because, you know, ultimately, you know, you got to script the plays. And so it's just, you know, there's a lot of subtle ways that it's changed. But what I've tried to do the best I can is just when it comes down to the nuts and bolts, is just be the same coach I was for a bigger position group. And I've tried to involve myself the best I can with the groups like the corners and the safeties and the defensive line. And hopefully they take to my personality and, you know, we build relationships that way.
And Clark Lee, just a very well-spoken, really smart guy. He kind of joked about his lack of athleticism and twitchiness, why he ended up playing fullback in college instead of anything else. But, I mean, again, we'll see how these things go. It's going to be a little bit of a learning curve for him. The question also came up, how's he going to call a game? And he said that's something that he's going to have to kind of address as he goes along, because it's something he hasn't done yet.
Yeah, I was looking at Notre Dame's schedule, and he's by far the youngest defensive coordinator on it. He's the only one that hasn't called plays before. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't be good at it right out of the chute. Lars Anderson at Stanford, and when he was promoted from linebackers coach to defensive coordinator at Stanford, they had a top five defense that year. So... that the not having done it doesn't mean you won't be good at it right away, but it is something that he's processing, he's having to think about, having to do. I think the fact that he and Mike Elko were so connected at the hip when they worked together, I think that in some ways he almost was kind of vicariously doing that with him through him, and I think that's going to help. But it is interesting. 30, you know, he's 36 years old, and but he just doesn't come off that way. But that's kind of what, you know, when the bright lights come on, that's kind of, you know, what we're going to have to see. That's the last kind of piece of Clark Lee that we haven't seen.
Well, he's got such a calm demeanor, for one, that I would think that would have to help. And two, the fact that he's coached linebackers, so you sort of have an intricate knowledge from inside out with how the defense works. And as you said, the experience that he has with Elko. And just listening to him last year, there were things that he talked about where he had sort of a real intricate knowledge of the thought process that Mike Elko has as well.
Right. You know, when you listen to him, he sells you that he can do this. I could see why in a job interview he would beat out people with much more experience because of the way he thinks through things, the way he approaches things, the ways he's able to express himself, the way he's able to create buy-in. And just watching practice, and this is, I'm sure, not going to get me in trouble, but because you could see how enthusiastic the players were about what they were learning. That, I mean, and you can hear them take it. It's just really interesting how it's gone.
And that's, I think, didn't you ask the question about why he explains the why to the players? And
absolutely.
Here is his answer to that question.
Again, I'm still young, right? So, like, I'm not thinking back that far when I think about when I was a player. But the coaching I responded to most, these are all smart guys. And, you know, the coaching I responded to most was not, you know, being browbeaten or having something shoved down my throat. It was being presented with how this is going to make you a better player. And I think when you do that, you create buy-in to it. And so you want the execution of the drill to be in a way that they know exactly how it's going to affect them on the field. And when they do that, their attention, their focus, their execution of the drill is higher. And that's where that comes from. I mean, I try to coach these guys in a way that is respectful of, again, their intelligence. And I know how desperately they want to be good. So let me not just drill the drill. Let me show and explain exactly how this drill will affect them in the game.
And so there is the why he explains why. And it's a very, very easy thought process. And I mean, I think, as you said, they seem to take to Clark Lee's methods and his teaching and his enthusiasm and energy and everything that he provides out there.
Right. The other thing that he will be tested on at some point is crisis management. And when you look at the 2011 Notre Dame team on defense in the 2012 team, the numbers of the 2011 team are very similar to the 2017 Notre Dame defense. And then there was this big jump to an elite level in 2012. And I think this team is positioned to do that. But it had some crises that it had to address in the offseason. Aaron Lynch, a freshman All-American, he ended up transferring. T. Shepard, a incoming freshman they kind of depended on to be in the mix, didn't make it academically, and Notre Dame had to leave the school and start over in junior college. You had some preseason injuries that threw Kavari Russell into a starting role as a true freshman. Matthias Farley in a safety role after he had been playing wide receiver during his redshirt freshman year. Bennett Jackson had just flipped over to the defense from offense. So there was a lot that they had to overcome, and they did. And so every year there's some kind of hiccup that you have to deal with, whether it's injury and eligibility or something like that. But again, I think Clark shows that kind of demeanor that it is going to propel him to do pretty well there. And by the way, Michigan Tech tied up the game with less than 2 minutes left in regulation.
Man.
3-3 in the third period. The goal was by Jake Jackson. They had an extra attacker, so I would assume that was they had pulled their goalie.
All right. So Notre Dame and Michigan Tech tied 3-3 And there is about a minute left, according to the stats that I see here, about a minute left in their NCAA tournament first round game. Notre Dame needs to score, otherwise they're going to overtime. So we will keep you updated on how that goes. And Notre Dame football practice is open to the media tomorrow morning, so we'll get to see the whole practice. We'll have comments from head coach Brian Kelly and select players next Monday as well here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. I'm Sean Stiers, along with South Bend Tribune Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen. We'll talk a little bit about Notre Dame's Pro Day yesterday and hear Eric's interview with NFL Network's Mike Mayock. That is coming up next when Sports Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues with South Bend Tribune Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen. I'm Sean Stiers. It is 5:37. Tom Noy will be here in the second hour tonight. We'll talk some Notre Dame basketball, some NCAA tournament, and more tonight here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Pro Day yesterday, Eric, and I saw that Bill Belichick, the Patriots head coach, was at Ohio State's Pro Day yesterday. Apparently he and Urban Meyer are fairly close. Mike Vrabel was, their coach's clinic is like next month, I think, because I was looking at some of the details, but I was going to say he was there, but he wasn't. But in any case, I'm curious, because we kind of looked around yesterday. Chris Ballard, the Colts general manager, was at Notre Dame. Didn't see a whole lot of other big name guys. Can you kind of think back historically? You've been to a lot of these pro days. Some of the bigger names you've seen show up at Notre Dame?
Off the top of my head, I mean, there have been GMs and head coaches, and
John Lynch was there last year.
Pittsburgh Steelers head coach was there.
Mike Tomlin.
Right, when Lewis Nix and those guys were coming out, Tuitt, although Tuitt didn't perform that day.
Do you remember that now that you said that?
Yeah. You know, when at Clawson's Pro Day, that drew some bigger names because, again, it's a quarterback who was fringe first/second round. It seemed like at Manti's and Tyler Eifert's pro days, there were a lot of big-time personnel there. And so
Manti was drinking the prune juice and cutting down and the whole thing.
Yeah, I think, again, sometimes it depends upon who you're competing against. Like Ohio State holding theirs the same day as Notre Dame's didn't help either of them.
Yeah, I guess Belichick has been to four pro days this week. Ohio State was the fourth.
I mean, the Cleveland Browns owner went to Wyoming's today, and because they have a quarterback that's going to get drafted in the first round.
Right.
How often does Wyoming get head coaches? How often do they get, like, first team scouts, you know, the team's best scout, instead of like, you know, hey, can you go represent us?
And I guess Ohio State has a cornerback who's projected to go in the first round, and the Patriots now need a corner with Malcolm Butler gone and everything. But
yeah, I think
not a lot of big name guys there at Ohio State, it seems like, this year.
Right. And I think with Nelson and McGlinchey, you know, Nelson is slam dunk first rounder, and McGlinchey, I think, is moving back in that direction. I think you saw some mocks where he was falling out of the first round, and now you see him back moving up from people that had him out of their mock first rounds, have them in the middle of the first round. You know, Mike Mayock thinks he's the best offensive tackle on his board in a flawed class.
Yeah.
So what is there from those two to kind of prove? It's really the quarterbacks that you're more worried about in evaluating, because, you know, you make a minor mistake on an offensive lineman, you can get somebody just as good in the next draft. With a quarterback, you may not be picking high enough to draft a quarterback.
Here's what I've always wondered. Maybe we try to ask somebody, not that it matters that much, but with all those NFL teams there, and representatives from all these NFL teams. Who coordinates who's running what drill? Have you ever talked to anybody about that?
Not really in detail. I think that I can't remember the young man's name that used to be at Notre Dame, and he is with the Giants now. He's in the Giants family. I can't remember his name. Blonde-haired guy.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about too, but yeah, I can't think of his name.
I think he coordinated that. I think Chad Clunder probably does it now. He's the AD that oversees football. But
so literally, like he said, hey, offensive line guy, you want to run this offensive line?
Well,
drill,
I think
that
he
kind of thing?
talks it over and kind of finds out what their preference
what.
Is. Yeah,
okay.
Who's going to be there, and then trying to figure out who might be best to do those, who has an interest in it, and then who would be good to do it. So, you know, I think that's kind of how that shakes out.
All right. You mentioned Mike Mayock, and you interviewed Mike Mayock yesterday. So here's a few minutes that Eric spent with NFL Network, former NBC Notre Dame football analyst Mike Mayock yesterday at Notre Dame's Pro Day.
Who do you feel like helped themselves today?
Pro Days are a funny thing, okay, because we're in the media and we tend to blow things up a little bit. Most of them are just kind of confirming what you've already seen on film, wanting to see a kid in person work out. And I think what you saw today, and I'm partial to these two kids because I've seen them grow up, basically. But when you talk about McGlinchey and Nelson, the workout they put on today was as good an offensive line Pro Day workout as I've seen. Now, put that in perspective. They're not in pads. Right? Usually I just kind of yawn when I see an offensive lineman's workout. I think what you saw with Quentin Nelson today is incredible power in his hands. When you see scouts and coaches that have been at thousands of these go, oh, you know there's something. So the power in Quentin's lower body and through his hands is apparent when he's hitting the bags today. And it's the same thing with Michael. Their work ethic, their intelligence, and the stuff you and I don't get to see where these coaches are here putting them on the board, watching film with them, closing the door one-on-one to see what they know, because they were so well coached by Harry Hiestand. They're so well positioned to take the next step, and I can't emphasize enough how ready they are to play.
When I saw your last rankings, you had McGlinchey as your top tackle.
Yeah.
Is there much wiggle room with those top tackles? Do you think he's far and away the best one?
No, I think this is not a great offensive tackle class, okay? And I think you can poke holes at the top five or six of them. I know I can, and I know the guys I talk to around the league can. The reason I bang the table for Mike McGlinchey is because I know what his passion, work ethic, and intensity for football is. So he has the length, he's got the size, he's got the athletic ability, but more importantly, he's got the intangibles. So that's why I banged the table for him.
What do you make of Josh Adams as a prospect?
You know, the tall running back thing is kind of an interesting conversation. And he gained a lot of yards. Most tall running backs need a little bit of a runway. You know, they're longer strider guys. And that's what he is. He ran for over 200 yards against Georgia. I think three runs of over 40 quick hitters where he just went bang and you could see him open it up in the speed take over. So today he caught the ball fairly well. He's got a foot problem that apparently is going to need some surgery. That's going to hurt him a little bit. So, I mean, I thought he was a third-day prospect, and I think the foot thing's going to hurt him a little bit. But with his height-weight-speed ratio, he's got a chance.
Last one from me. Niles was a guy that played hurt all year, had shoulder surgery in January.
Yep.
What do you make of him at the next level, his chances?
I think there's been a bunch of kids that have come out of Notre Dame in the last 3 or 4 years undrafted and made teams. Who am I thinking of?
Anawalu,
and then the safety. Is he an Indy?
Oh, yeah. Matthias Farley.
Exactly. Farley. Those are the two. Anawalu and Farley come to mind. I think this kid's very similar. He's an under-the-radar, really good, solid football player. He's going to play special teams, and I think he'll make a team because of special teams, and I think he'll hang around long enough to start to compete for playing time in year two or three.
So that's Eric Hansen with Mike Mayock from the NFL Network yesterday. Some interesting insights there. And one guy that you didn't necessarily get to talk about as much was Equanimeous St. Brown. And I saw Pete Sampson from Irish Illustrated tweet this morning. And I wanted to mention this because we're going to start to run short on time here real quick. Here's a quote. Pete asked him what NFL teams want to know most about him. And Equanimeous said, quote, "The most common question I get is, do I love football because I went to Notre Dame and I speak languages? That's the common question I get," end quote. What do you make of that?
It didn't jump off the page at me too much, because I know that teams in general want to get down to, with every prospect, whether football's important
to them. Cut and dry, doesn't matter to
you. Yeah, it doesn't matter to you. And, you know, Equanimeous, I don't know that it's so much that he speaks languages, you know, foreign languages and things of that nature, as much as it was when you saw him on 50-50 balls, there were some questions about him when he was a little dinged up. He wasn't always on the field. Those are things scouts hear, and they want to know how important football is to him. It could be a very fair question. It could be an unfair question. You know, I guess Quentin Nelson probably doesn't get that question, because if they did, he would, like, push them into the third row of the spectators.
Just give them that look.
Yeah, give them that look. But I think a lot of kids do get asked that. I think Josh Rosen, in particular, of the quarterbacks, of the elite quarterbacks, he's a guy that gets asked that a lot because, again, you don't really know with him.
I think with Mike McGlinchey, the question should be, do you one day plan to run for president? Because the way he stands up there and the way he can talk, we've talked about it before, but just the composure he has, the thoughtful answers that he gives. I mean, this guy, in 30 years, he could be running, I'm telling you.
Do you have to give thoughtful answers when you're president? I'm just asking.
You don't have to, but he can.
Okay. Just wondering.
Maybe that is a knock on him, because any politician doesn't always necessarily give the thoughtful answer, do they?
Yeah. I mean, Mike McGlinchey, I think really has positioned himself well, and I think whoever drafts him is going to be really happy with what they get from him on and off the field. And I think it's interesting that he's going to spend the next month at Notre Dame training. I think that's good for him, but I also think it's good for Notre Dame because he's going to be around this current football team that whole time.
Quentin will too. He was saying that they're both going to be here. So that's good. They'll be around together and training and working and, yeah, like you said, kind of pushing some of those other guys as well. It's 5:48. Let's get into this break. When we come back, Eric's My Five question of the day regarding Notre Dame women in the Sweet 16 this weekend. We'll do that when Budweiser's Weekday Sports Ski Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
With the Notre Dame women's basketball in the Sweet 16 this weekend in Spokane, Washington, the five things Eric Hansen's looking for from the women, starting with number five.
I'm going to say, and I'm focusing on the Sweet 16 game and not the potential Elite Eight game.
Okay.
A good start by Arike Ogunbowale. Arike is an incredible fourth quarter player. But when you get to this level, some of her slow starts, I think you start against a team as good as Texas A&M, I think could make it really difficult to have to come back and expend all that energy again with just maybe 6.5 healthy scholarship players.
Number four,
bench production. Neither Notre Dame nor Texas A&M gets a ton of production from their benches. The highest score for Texas A&M off the bench is 2.9 points per game. They have a lot more bodies, though. But if Notre Dame can get some quality minutes out of Coco Nelson and Danielle Patterson with Catherine Westbelt's ankle kind of funny, that's going to help them both in the short term and the long term.
Number three.
Rebounding edge. Notre Dame crushed Villanova on the boards by almost 30, but they're going to meet their peer in rebounding. They're both top 16 rebounding teams in the country. Anreal Howard is the seventh leading rebounder in the country at 12.1. So when Notre Dame has to go against somebody that's as good as them, are they going to want it more?
Number two.
the use of Catherine Westbeld. She isn't practicing. At least she wasn't practicing when they were still in South Bend. They are in Spokane now. The thing about it is, Sean, does that ankle balloon up after a game? Does it balloon up after half?
And the flight and the whole thing.
Right. And so if you're playing her on in Saturday's game, are you then counting on not having her for Monday? Because that's a real possibility.
Yeah.
If you play her in the first half, does it swell up at halftime? So the use of Catherine Westbeld is going to be really interesting to watch.
Eric's five things he's looking for from the Notre Dame women's basketball team against Texas A&M in the Sweet 16 tomorrow. Number five, good start by Arike Ogunbowale. Number four, bench production. Number three, rebounding edge. Number two, the use of the injured Catherine Westbeld. And number one,
this team became a top four team when it got into defensive intensity, and they need to do that from the get-go because, again, Texas A&M, one of the top scoring teams in the country, one of the top shooting teams in the country. Kennedy Carter, their freshman guard, ninth in the country in scoring. When Notre Dame gets after it from a defensive standpoint, they can beat anybody except Connecticut and maybe even Connecticut.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so that is Eric's My Five question of the day today. It is 5:55. We'll wrap up the first hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat right after this.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, Mike Varell will have a feature on Julian Love, Notre Dame's Love connection, and maybe their best defensive player. Tyler will have a feature on future good Notre Dame players, the recruiting visitors coming this weekend. Notre Dame and Michigan Tech are in overtime right now. They're about 4 minutes into it, still tied 3-3. We'll have the latest on that.
I'm biting my fingernails.
The latest on the Notre Dame women's basketball practicing out in Spokane. They play tomorrow afternoon, and much, much more.
All right. Very good. Have a good weekend, Eric. Are you going to venture off to that magical hot dog extravaganza place?
I think I'm going to try to go through the drive-thru window. I'm crossing my fingers.
Good luck to you.
If the line isn't out to the street, then
I think
I'm...
Do you know the shortcut of how to get out of here?
No.
You go the back way and over... over toward the hospital over there.
All right.
It's very... Well, maybe Jared... Maybe John should show you.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
And hockey is in overtime. Notre Dame and Michigan State, Michigan Tech, tied 3-3. Tom Noy joins me for the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, WSBT.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Tom Noy.
Second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats begins. An update from Notre Dame hockey. If you weren't listening, it's over on Z94.3 FM. The Fighting Irish and Michigan Tech are in overtime, tied at 3. We will keep you updated. Darren Pritchett has the call over on Z94.3 FM. We've got more Sweet 16 games coming up tonight, starting in an hour when top seed Kansas in the Midwest takes on 5th-seeded Clemson. That is followed by West Virginia and another number one seed, Villanova. Syracuse and Duke after that, and then Texas Tech and Purdue is the nightcap. Tip it off at around 10 o'clock tonight. That's in Boston.
You got 1 foot out the door already. Don't go anywhere.
I do.
All right, I need you here for the full hour.
I've got the DVR set, so I don't have a time limit. I'm good.
That starts at 7:07, right?
Yes, it does.
So how long is it going to take you to get home when you leave here right at like 6:59 and 59 seconds?
Take the shortcut. There really is no shortcut for me. I can get there in 8 to 10, depending on
okay,
traffic.
Okay, so like that by the first TV timeout, you'll be settled.
Right.
All right, good deal.
Yep. They are 9 minutes into overtime. Still no score between Notre Dame and Michigan Tech.
Well, there is score. There is a score.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry.
How about that?
Still no overtime score. They're tied at 3. Still no overtime score. Of course, the first goal wins. Darren Pritchett tweeted earlier, Michigan Tech has not won an NCAA tournament game since 1981. Of course, Notre Dame trying to get back to the Frozen Four. And what's the most intriguing part about this matchup here is Notre Dame is the number one seed at this regional. Last year, they were the number four seed. They won this game and ended up going to the Frozen Four. So,
and Michigan Tech says, I was watching the interview at the end of regulation with a Michigan Tech player. I don't know who it was. I just turned it on to see, check the score before I came down here.
Yeah.
And he said, Michigan Tech player said, it took about a period for us to adjust to Notre Dame's speed and their strength. But he goes, I think we got them right where we want them, and we're taking it to them, and overtime is going to be ours. So we'll see if that holds up.
Notre Dame's had a lead a couple of times. They were down 1-0, went up 2-1, and then it was tied at 2. They went up 3-2, and they gave up a shorthand goal with about 1:06 to play in regulation. It sounded like Michigan Tech pulled their goalie and was able to tie it up at 3 to send it to overtime, and that's where they remain right now. What a night of basketball last night, huh? At least two good games, anyway.
Two good games. Oh, well, I mean, Michigan, I know that was a blowout, but that's fun. That's pretty fun to watch when you have a team that's locked in and together and connected and making shots. That's some pretty good basketball right there. I don't care if it was a 40-point game or a 3-point deficit at one point.
I was wishing the announcing crews were switched because Brian Anderson and Chris Weber had the close games, Loyola, Chicago, Nevada, and then Kansas State and Kentucky after that. But it was Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller on the other side with the blowout games. And I would flip over because, you know, I love Kevin Harlan, man. And Reggie Miller, I think that's a great, great TV pairing. They were having fun. I did flip over once when Moritz Wagner hit the three down in the corner. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, when he was talking. The Texas A&M guy started yapping at Mo Wagner.
After he hit a shot.
And they were down, 26 at that point?
Right.
So then Wagner comes back and gives him a little dribble ball fake and then hits the corner three and starts yapping at him again. So it's like, you know what? You can't. There should be a rule. You can't trash talk if you're down by 20.
That's exactly
you just can't
right.
do it. Because it doesn't mean, like, just you can talk all you want. Look at the scoreboard, pal.
Yeah.
Like, come on. What are you doing trash talking? You're down 23.
Yep. I would guess. Now, I don't know. I haven't seen what the pairings are. We've got two number one seeds left. Do you think that Nance?
I would say
Grant Hill have the Kansas and Duke in Omaha. I think
they are in Omaha.
Okay.
I think seeing somebody's tweet or maybe Jim Nance's tweet. I think that pairing is in Omaha, and I believe it's
probably Ian Eagle.
Ian Eagle, Jim Spanarkle, Allie LaForce in Boston.
Okay,
so. But all did right. you see? Did you watch what came, the end of the? Was it the Loyola? Yeah, the end of the Loyola Nevada game with Chris Weber and what he was all hot about. Did you see that?
Oh, that was the traveling, right?
He's calling the guy traveling. I'm like, is it? And I
He's
tweeted
got the
it.
Most famous traveling. In
I tweeted and it just it went history. Almost viral. It got like 100 likes within an hour, and I said it's ironic that Chris Weber's calling out the guy from Loyola who traveled when right. he had the most blatant travel in NCAA tournament history on an inbound play.
That's right.
At the end of regulation in a close game, and Chris Weber's like, that's a travel. Hey, Chris, you traveled before you tried to call timeout there in the Superdome against North Carolina in 1993.
So let's go back for those maybe who weren't paying attention because your bracket's already destroyed. The night started off with the Loyola-Chicago-Nevada game, and the Ramblers, the Fighting Sister Jeans of Loyola-Chicago, beat Nevada 69-68 to advance to the Elite Eight. Marcus Towns of Loyola, 18 points, 5 assists. Clayton Custer, 15 points. Loyola, 15 assists on 29 made baskets.
Just That's moving nice. The ball.
Carving them up.
Making shots. Carving them up. And they're at one point, it was funny because I talked all on Wednesday's show about Eric Musselman, and they run an NBA style, and they run all kinds of NBA sets. That Nevada team at one point looked like an NBA team that was on the second leg of a back-to-back and just didn't care about being there. It was a layup drill for Loyola before Nevada thought, you know what? We better turn the switch, otherwise we're going to get blown out. But for a chunk of that game, after they had jumped to such a big lead, they were just—they were like an NBA team. They were disinterested in guarding, and Loyola just carved them up and moving the ball and making the extra pass. And I mentioned beautiful basketball with Michigan earlier. That was some beautiful, beautiful basketball by Loyola there against Nevada.
Their three tournament wins are by a combined total of 4 points.
It's amazing. Like, they just don't care. Oh, it's a close game. We don't care. And Notre Dame, I've covered Notre Dame teams that have been like that, where every close game, and on both ends, they would find a way to win it, and they would find a way to lose it. Loyola's just like, close game, NCAA tournament, Elite Eight on the line. Doesn't matter. That doesn't matter that that team's finding a groove and they're on a roll. We're just going to find a way to make the plays and make the shots and get out of there with a win.
Let me ask you this. Nevada has a set of twins who transferred from North Carolina State.
Covered those twins, Cody Martin and I'm drawing a blank.
Cody and it starts with a C as well.
C-A.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not Clayton. No.
No.
In any case.
The Martin twins.
They have interesting hair, but Purdue has there's a transfer from Purdue as well.
Everett Stevens.
Yeah.
And Everett Stevens' son.
Clayton Custer for Loyola is one of a handful of transfers over there. And I saw a friend of mine say something on social media last night as well. He commented about the fact that almost everyone in this game is a transfer and it's out of control. Do you think there's a problem?
No.
Because they transferred down. They went from Power Five schools to schools that are way off the beaten path. It's not like either one of these teams is a traditional anything, even in their conferences. So what do you think about
ESPN
that?
Starts running its transfer list at the maybe early February, late February as the season's winding down. And I think I want to say last year there were over 500 names. But that's just the way of the college basketball world, where if you can be a one and done, all right, I'm a one and done. It doesn't matter what my situation is going to be. I'm going to play this 1 year and go to the NBA. And kids that can't go to the NBA, they think of it in the same way.
Caleb Custer, by the way, right?
No, Caleb Martin.
Caleb Martin.
Caleb and Cody Martin.
Right, right.
So, and I mean, they were like, their situation was totally bizarre because they're North Carolina natives playing for the state school in North Carolina State. And they said, we don't like it. We don't like our situation.
And really, of any of them, the one Martin, the one that's a little bit better, Cody?
Yeah.
He's probably got the only NBA chance of anybody playing in that game last night, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it's not like, again, it's like you're playing, you're still playing, you want to play college basketball, you went somewhere, you're presumably going to get a degree because these are all going to be four-year guys because, again, it's not like it's all a bunch of NBA talent out there. I've got no problem with it. Custer, the one that I keep sticking in my brain for whatever reason, he started out at Iowa State. He's at Loyola now, and I thought it was interesting because he did the post-game interview on TV on the floor, and you saw him walking off the floor, and a couple of the K-State players came up and were kind of – because they're all from Overland Park, Kansas, which is a Kansas City suburb.
And they're former Big 12 colleagues.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I mean, he knows those guys from the Big 12. But transfers, I mean, that's just the way of the college basketball world, because they've made it easy for players to say, you know what, if I don't like my situation – I'm just going to start over. And it's even easier if you're a graduate transfer. Like, you can graduate in 4 years, graduate in 3 years. You don't like your situation, you can go play somewhere right away. You already have your degree.
Yep. Now, the other game, and there's a few transfers in this one too, Kansas State and Kentucky. And I said this earlier this week a couple of times. Everyone, because of all these the 9 and 11 and all these seeds being, and a 7 seed being left around, it was, Kentucky's going to the Final Four. But
boom.
I think a lot of people put way too much stock in Kentucky just because the brand says Kentucky.
This Big
is
Blue
not,
Nation.
This is not, even for all the young teams that Calipari has had, Not even close. Kansas State just got it done with defense last night.
And that Kentucky, that's not Kentucky as Kentucky has come to be known. Like, that's not a very good team where all five guys are going to go to the NBA draft. And I was thinking, as I'm watching Kansas State make shots and just do what they do and kind of keep holding Kentucky off, I'm like, why couldn't Notre Dame get that Kentucky team in 2015?
No kidding.
Instead of getting those guys.
That's the one. Well, and you know, the funny thing about that, and I've thought about this too, because we've seen some amazing games in this tournament so far. That Elite Eight game that those two played, that was the first really good game of that whole tournament, if you remember. There were just some stinker, boring games in the first two rounds.
Well, Notre Dame played maybe two of the best games that year, where they went to overtime again. Actually, three, where they almost lost to Northeastern. Then two nights later in Pittsburgh, they have to go to overtime to beat Butler. Pat Connaughton blocks.
They were close, but they weren't all.
Well, they were close. There was drama involved.
Right.
And then the Kentucky one.
That was just a great game.
That was as high level a basketball game as I've ever covered in 20 years, to where it was just a different atmosphere at Quicken Loans Arena that night. And I'm thinking, man, why couldn't Notre Dame play that Kentucky team instead of getting Karl Anthony Towns and Willie Cauley-Stein and Devin Booker and all those first-round NBA draft picks that year? So I was surprised Kentucky didn't show better, but that, again, that's not the Kentucky team that we've come to know as, boy, Kentucky, big blue nation, watch out.
We have the final.
It's over?
I'm still looking on live stats, but
I can tell by your reaction.
Notre Dame won 4-3. I'll wait and find out who got the winning goal and all that, but Notre Dame beat Michigan Tech 4-3. There it is. The live stats just went final. The winning goal by Jordan Gross, who scored twice in today's game. Jake Evans with the assist. So the Fighting Irish, the top seed in Bridgeport, beat Michigan Tech 4-3, and they'll advance to the second round. One win away from consecutive Frozen Fours.
They will now play the winner of Providence and Clarkson.
Yes.
Which comes up next.
And that game was supposed to start in 10 minutes, but they're probably at least
not going to happen.
Away. Yeah.
So,
all right.
Irish one win away from the Frozen Four.
He's Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune. I'm Sean Steyer. So Kansas State wins. Bruce Weber. Darren would just be ecstatic.
Where's Darren Pritchett when we need him?
Forgot to ask him about that. We had him on the Leprechaun Lunch earlier today. Bruce Weber gets Kansas State to the Elite Eight. Second one, the first time since 2010. The two Elite Eight, and that was, of course, under Bob Huggins. Mm-hmm. The two Elite Eights for Kansas State. Their first time getting even to the Sweet 16 since they lost to Kansas with Mitch Richmond for the Wildcats in the 1988 Elite Eight.
Is that when back
when? Did you know that?
Is that when back when Kansas State wore those funky uniforms?
That was after that. We were talking about
the two shades of. Well, they used to wear
violet top.
Yeah, they used to wear those when Rolando Blackman was there.
That's right.
When it was like, whoa, the shades of purple. Yep. Not a good look.
Yep.
Not a good look.
They were on the cover of Sports Illustrated when they beat Oregon State back in 1981 with Roe Blackman with the jumper, the violet top, and the dark purple bottom. Not a good look.
Nope. Not at all.
Good look.
But how many people are rooting for Loyola to go to the Final Four?
Man,
like you can't imagine this as your Final Four if it happens. Kansas State, Syracuse, Texas Tech, and Florida State.
You kidding me? It could happen.
Oh, how is Florida State in the Elite Eight?
I was going to ask you that.
Oh, I have no answer for that. Like Gonzaga, we talk about Kentucky not being Kentucky. Gonzaga wasn't the Gonzaga that normally is in the NCAA tournament. But Florida State, they were just like, they were meh.
Notre Dame beat Florida State by 15.
Meh. There was nothing special about Florida State the entire year. There was one time when they were either 7-8 or 8-8 in the ACC, and they were in 10th place, and they were ranked 24th in the country. I don't know what other people saw from Florida State that we didn't see covering the ACC, but I watched Florida State play a ton this year, and I was never impressed to the point where I thought, man, that's a team that could make a run in the NCAA tournament.
It's their first Elite Eight since 1993, their third all-time. They're trying to get to the Final Four for the first time since 1972.
Yes.
Man. And then you've got Michigan routing Texas A&M. But think about Kansas State, by the way. Here they are. They're this number 9 seed. Nobody expected them to do anything. They're in the Elite Eight.
Nobody's
but, talking. But think about this. The two best stories of this tournament are UMBC, the first 16 seed to ever beat a number 1 seed. Kansas State beats them in the next game. Now you've got Loyola Chicago, who everybody loves with the with Sister Jean. If K-State wins that game, nobody's going to be pulling for them.
Phillips Arena will be 99.9% pro Loyola Chicago tomorrow. There'll be one, a small fraction of Kansas State fans, but that will be a pro Loyola crowd.
It's funny though, because you know I'm from Kansas, got my Jayhawk shirt on.
Yes, you do.
I've got both KU and K-State friends back home who I'm friends with on Facebook and the whole thing. I saw next to nothing from the K-State people.
Yeah.
I'd say, come on, are you kidding? This is as good as it gets for you.
Maybe they're just in shock that they're still alive.
There was a great story, though. We're talking about Rolando Blackman and that Mitch Richmond K-State. There was a great story that Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star did the other day about the divergent path that Kansas and Kansas State have taken since that 88 Elite Eight game. You had Danny Manning, Mitch Richmond. Mitch Richmond went on to a great pro career, but and Lon Kruger was the coach of that Kansas State team. Mm-hmm. They were pretty even in basketball up until that point, and it's just a complete separation between the two now.
Now it's Kansas and way up here in Kansas State. Eh.
I think they've played 76 times since that 88 Elite Eight, and Kansas has won 66 of them.
I believe it.
That's just, but back, but they were, again, they were relatively even back then. Just amazing.
Not anymore. Big brother, little brother.
K-State is in the Elite Eight. Kansas trying to get there tonight. Duke on the other side.
You look at this. Sean Stiers is really nervous right now, folks. Really nervous. He's moving around. He can't sit still.
That's right.
He keeps looking at the clock that's over my head.
I got a leg pump that some broadcaster that we know does on press row.
Really? You went there? Really? Let's just not even start with that.
6:25. Let's take a timeout. When we come back, Tom Noy did a Notre Dame basketball chat at IndyInsider.com.
It was a grind.
Oh man! So we'll look at some of the questions that he fielded there as we flip it back to Notre Dame basketball, where they go after this season, and what their lineup might look like next year, and a whole lot more. We'll do that next when Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Speaking of March Madness.
Villanova, West Virginia? That's a game I'm interested in watching.
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm sure you are.
KU guy.
You're not really interested in that game, are you?
Yes, I am. Villanova, West Virginia?
Like, really interested?
More so than Kansas,
so you're Clemson. You're saying you're not as worried about Kansas tonight?
Yeah, I think...
That's what you're trying to tell me? I can live with that if you're telling me that.
No, I just see... This may not bode well for you, given my prediction.
That's very true.
Accuracy.
I might just want to stop right now.
But I can see walking in the door and Kansas being up like 14-4 against Clemson, and then be like, all right, when's Villanova West Virginia playing?
It's really scary that you did.
See,
that.
Told you.
All right, South Bend Tribune Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy, along with me,
hello,
Sean Stiers, talking a little Notre Dame basketball. You had a chat yesterday.
Don't ask.
You survived the chat.
I know what you. I know what's coming.
Which,
I just know it's coming.
Which one? Do you want to just start with it then?
it surfaced time and time and time and time again in yesterday's chat, and it's like the most popular question. What's the lineup going to be next year?
Right, and that's there are a million questions. About
who's going to be the start? Who's going to be in the starting lineup?
Yep. And you had? I didn't put your answer.
Oh, so I can change it, and you'll never know.
Yeah, I did see you have Prentice Hubb as a possible starter next year.
I do,
though. Freshman.
And it's so contingent on a lot of factors. Like Prentice Hubb was recruited for one reason, one main reason, and that was to step into the second ball handling duties when Matt Farrell graduated. Mm-hmm. Matt Farrell graduates, leaves the program. Prentice Hubb steps in, plays alongside TJ Gibbs from the jump. But Prentice Hubb had reconstructive surgery on his right knee in the fall. Missed his entire senior year of high school will only really get back to playing and turning, cutting it all loose on the foreign tour of the Bahamas in August. So you don't know what the future holds for him as far as do they slow play him? Does he hit the ground running and they say, oh, look, everything's fine. You can't even tell that he had surgery. So I put him there, but I don't know if that's going to remain. And if it doesn't, you can go any number of different directions.
See, cross
with
that
the starting five.
Lineup question, cross that lineup question.
See, there's a lot of lineup questions in there.
Lineup question.
And it was...
Now, someone you told me about, we were talking, I think, at the NIT game against Hampton.
Oh, thanks for reminding me.
I know, which seems like...
It does seem like 3 weeks ago.
I know.
Like, when was that? I don't even remember.
Carmody is someone who you think can come in and help them pretty quickly.
The one aspect that this basketball team really, really needed, and I got a question about it last night, too. There was just somebody tweeted at me of was... And we're not going to go down that road. I never went down that road during the season because it was obvious that he needed to leave, and that was Matt Ryan. What would have happened if Matt Ryan would have stayed? Mm-hmm. That's like saying, you know, what would have happened had Notre Dame just lost that?
Was he going to get invested in playing defense?
No. He had 2 feet out the door. He had his mind made up at the end of last year that it was time to go, and a change was needed on both parts mm-hmm. for Notre Dame and for Matt Ryan to leave. So that was a non-factor. But as they worked deeper into this season and the injuries happened and the lineups shuffled, the one aspect that this program really missed was a guy that could make a shot on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
They had guys that had chances to make shots, Rex Pfluger, John Mooney, Nick Jogo, they had guys that had opportunities to be shot makers. None of those guys really took the ball and ran with it and shot it and made it.
And when you say what if about him, I mean, this was going to be his shot. I mean, that's what this program is. You grow into the role. This was going to be his opportunity this year. He missed it. Instead, he's sitting out not playing this.
And the ironic part was Matt Ryan, one of the reasons that he decided, you know, I'm going to take the jump and restart my career somewhere else, was he's looking over his shoulder and he sees DJ Harvey coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks DJ Harvey's going to be the guy that's going to steal his minutes. He's not going to be able to start the way he wanted to. Oh, I better get going. And as it turns out, now we're way off tangent on this, but as it turns out, Matt Ryan might have trouble getting minutes at Vanderbilt given who they've got coming in with their recruiting class. They've got a lot of big-time players, Darius Garland, Simi Chatu, and they may get Romeo Langford if they get those three guys.
See, and he's someone, we talked earlier about guys transferring down and how Loyola, Chicago, and Nevada has all the... I mean, he's someone who maybe should have gone that route instead of to another Power 5 conference.
Playing at Vanderbilt last year would have been transferring down. But I don't.
That's true.
I don't think Matt Ryan. You know,
didn't they make the tournament last year?
They did, but they were all right.
Yeah.
But they lost to Northwestern in the tournament. But I don't think Matt Ryan banked on Bryce Drew being the recruiter that he was and bringing in a top five recruiting class.
Right.
But Robbie Carmody, he's a guy that they targeted early, just like they targeted Prentice Hubb. They said, Prentice Hubb, that's our guy. That's our number one guy. We've got to go get Prentice Hubb. And they were on Prentice Hubb for a long time. Same thing with Robbie Carmody as a shooting guard. They had been recruiting Robbie Carmody out of suburban Pittsburgh for 2-3 years. So they wanted Robbie Carmody, and they said, he's a guy that's going to be a shot maker for us. We can plug him into the rotation, and he's going to play, and he's going to make shots right away. And that's what this team misses. So any other year, and a lot of people, I go through this all the time, at this time of year with when people see Notre Dame and they see, oh, well, season's over. What do they got coming next year? They always want to plug the freshman in like right away. This guy's going to play. They do the same thing with football. Hey, Phil Jurkovec. Hey, maybe he's going to play. He's going to be the starting quarterback when the Michigan game rolls on. You want people to tap the brakes when it comes to freshmen because that's generally not how this Notre Dame men's basketball program has run. But everything that this team went through this past season, I'm not going to rule out them taking a long look at Robbie Carmody, them taking a long look at Dane Goodwin. And I always, when people say, who's the one freshman that's going to play more than any of these other three or any of these other four or five, I always say Robbie Carmody over Dane Goodwin because they spent so much time recruiting Robbie Carmody that Dane Goodwin kind of came in at the 11th hour and said, Thad Mata's, he was committed to Ohio State, and Dane Goodwin said, Thad Mata's leaving Ohio State. I don't think I want to go to Ohio State. Can I look at Notre Dame? And Notre Dame said, Dane, we love you as a player. We'd really like you to be a part of the program, but we have to be honest with you. We've spent a lot of time with Robbie Carmody, and Robbie Carmody is going to commit. And Robbie Carmody's been with us from the start, and he's going to get the first chance to fill that role. And Dane Goodwin was fine with that. Dane Goodwin said, all right, but I still want to come. So Carmody's going to get that first chance, but don't write off Dane Goodwin, and don't write off Nate Leshefsky, even though Nate Leshefsky's like 6'9", 6'10", 195 pounds. Mm-hmm. So
come on, Tom. We've got a lot more questions to get to here.
No, we're still sticking with the rotation. All right, what else we got?
Okay, this question is from Joe. He said, Notre Dame was seemingly in the spotlight all year, starting with Maui, then the conjuncture surrounding Bonzi's injury. With some of that attention is, well, while some is great for the program, do you think Mike Bray welcomes being off the radar a little bit going into next year?
So much so. Like, it was the same situation as 2014-15 after they're coming off their 15-17 season, 6-12 in the ACC. Nobody's talking about Notre Dame. Nobody's feeling the good vibe and the juice about being in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Notre Dame, nobody's talking about him. Let him go over to Europe, take the foreign tour, kind of bond and find their way of the chemistry. What's the chemistry going to be? Then they go out and they turn around. They're 32-6 and 14-4, win the ACC tournament. You're not expecting that next year, but it's good for this team just to get out of the spotlight. No more Bonzi Colson, no more Matt Farrell, no more national expectation, no more A schedule in the league. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame's just off the radar, and they can go and kind of figure everything out for the first two and a half months of the season.
And there's going to take some figuring out.
It is.
Because they're going to have this. Is this, since Mike Bray has been here, is next year's team going to be about as young as any that he's ever had?
It's going to be young, and it's going to be not. You don't have as many knowns and certainties like, all right, this year, we know Bonzi Colson's playing 35 minutes. We know Matt Farrell's playing 35 minutes. Same thing with Rex Pfluger. Yeah, maybe TJ Gibbs and Martin Gebben can do that. That never happened because of the injuries. Next year, you just have no idea what it's going to be like.
All right, now another one. This is from Mark in Rochester, and I'll just kind of condense this a little bit. What's going to happen with Elijah Burns? Because you've got Mooney, Durham, all the freshmen are going to kind of anchor the front line you would expect next year. And then what about Jogo as well? What do you see with his minutes? He's a guy a lot of people are down on, but yeah. I don't think you can give up on him this soon.
And somebody emailed me last night and said, you know, Nick Jogo, I would push him out of the program. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. Let's take a look, and I may be long-winded on this, but I've got a lot of things. I've got a strong opinion on Nick Jogo, where he sat out all of last year. He never played.
Right.
All right. He had no idea what college basketball was all about firsthand. It's different sitting on the bench. It's a whole nother story when you're playing. So he sits out all last year. He starts and plays 32 minutes at Cameron Indoor Stadium
right. This
year. You talk about a jump. Not playing at all, and then having to start at Duke. So I don't think he was ready for everything that this team needed him to do because of all the injuries and guys missing out of the lineup. And Nick Jogo, his one job on this team this year was to make shots, right? And he didn't make shots. But in practice, all he did was run the blue team as the point guard because you had two point guards on the roster, TJ Gibbs, Matt Farrell. They played together on the white team. They needed a guard to run the blue team. That was Nick Jogo. So here's Nick Jogo all the time in practice playing the role of a point guard. And then when it gets time to get in the game, he's not the point guard. He's the shooting guard. So it was a funky role for him. And that was only his first year of college basketball. So I don't know how you give up on a guy that quickly.
Let me ask you this then, because we saw TJ Gibbs lose all this weight. He was just a lot different looking athlete, shooter. Just everything about his game was so different this year. I don't think that weight loss is necessarily something Jogo can do. So what do you see that he can do to make himself more valuable next year.
Get locked in and be focused for 40 minutes. He missed two breakaway dunks this year. And after the first time he missed it in Maui, I talked to him after they got back from Maui, and I was like, Nick, what's up with the dunk? he said, you know what? I brought it back to you. Like, he was trying to explain it to me. He goes, I got nervous. Now here he is. He had the big stage ready to dunk on national TV on ESPN at the end of one of the I think it was the LSU game, and he missed the dunk, and he's like, no, it's just I was nervous. So it's the transition to being a guy that doesn't have any pressure on him because he's sitting out for the season. Now all of a sudden you're in the rotation. I just think he learned a lot about college basketball this year to where he's like, all right, now I know. I've got to live in the gym. I've got to make even more shots than I did in practice. And I just have to be better. And maybe the fact that he spent all his time in practices as a point guard instead of playing what he is, and that's a shooting guard, maybe that has an effect on him. But I still think, given the way he can shoot the ball and the way I've seen him shoot the ball, I think there's a role for him. Now, the other guy, Elijah Burns, no clue.
Yeah.
Because we talked earlier in the show about graduate transfers. Mm-hmm. Elijah Burns will graduate. He was on track to graduate this spring.
Really? Already?
Already. So he can graduate. He has 2 years of eligibility left. I know he's in the same class as Rex Pfluger, but he sat out his freshman year because he had ankle surgery late in his senior year of high school, which kind of put him back as far as the timetable. So Elijah Burns could conceivably, if he looks at his role and says, I don't like what I'm seeing for the future, he can go somewhere right away and play in 2018-19.
Real quick, before we got to get into this break, on the subject of transfers, as young as these guys are going to be, they will get Durham next year. Do you think that Mike Bray will be in the grad transfer market this summer if he can find someone who makes sense?
If the perfect player, the perfect situation rolls around, I think they may take a look at that. But again, graduate transfers
are have a pretty stuck roster as it is.
Yeah, graduate transfers are in it just for themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why they're leaving. They don't like their situation. They're in it for themselves for 1 year, maybe 2 years. I would say if the right candidate rolls around, you might have to take a look at that.
All right, it is 6:47. Let's take a timeout. Tom Noy, Notre Dame, or South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame basketball insider. I'm Sean Stiers, Budweiser's weekday sports beat. Notre Dame hockey victorious in overtime earlier tonight against Michigan Tech. They will move on and play either Providence or Clarkson tomorrow at 6 o'clock over on Z94.3 FM. Darren Pritchett will have the call. Let's take a timeout, and then back we'll talk some more hoops coming up next on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Evans goes center point. Gross takes a shot. They score! Notre Dame wins! Jordan Gross, high slot, wrister. He beats Munson, and we'll see you tomorrow night in the East Regional Final. Notre Dame has done it. They have beaten Michigan Tech 4-3, 16-24. Gross, a wrister. He beats Munson stick side, and the field is down to 15 teams for the NCAA tournament.
Darren Pritchett with a call earlier tonight within the last, 30 minutes or so, I guess, over on Z94.3 FM. The Fighting Irish hockey team winning in overtime. Jordan Gross with his second goal of the game and got the winner in overtime, and the Fighting Irish move on. They will play either Providence or Clarkson tomorrow at 6 o'clock. That'll be over on Z94.3 FM as well. Darren Pritchett, the voice of the Fighting Irish hockey team, will have the call for you. Along with South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy, I'm Sean Stiers. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues. We are a little bit less than 9 minutes away from 7 o'clock. Westwood One's coverage of March Madness continues at 7 tonight on WSBT. Tom had his Notre Dame basketball chat at IndyInsider.com earlier today, and we were talking about that. I wanted to get to some other stuff. We started this conversation about UConn the other day.
Yes.
Tom.
Now we have, 3 minutes?
I know. We ended up kind of running short. Short answer was the dissolution of the Big East and not getting into the ACC, along with Calhoun. Which do you weigh as the bigger factor in the drop-off in UConn basketball over the last, what, 5 years or so?
Going to the American Conference. I mean, the Big East was really good for Connecticut, and Connecticut was really good for the Big East. And then Jim Calhoun leaves. I know Kevin Ollie walks in, but he did win a national championship with a lot of Jim Calhoun's players. But it's different if you're selling the Big East and you're selling Madison Square Garden and you're selling, we're going to play against Syracuse, we're going to play against Georgetown, we're going to play against Villanova, Notre Dame. It's different. You're selling that as opposed to playing Houston, South Florida,
yeah,
SMU. That's a hard sell for kids who grew up on a program that was in the Big East the way Notre Dame was, or Connecticut was in the Big East. Like the Connecticut was a lot of times the draw in Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament. So they lost the Big East. They lost their entire identity because of football. I know college football drives the bus in college athletics. It's college football. It's college football. It's college football, and then everything else. But Connecticut really hurt itself by saying, you know what? We're going to get on this college football bus, and we're gonna maybe become a power program in college football. They got a down. They may have to take a look at that and say, maybe football's not the answer for us.
We got about 2 minutes or so, and I need to get two questions in.
No way. Okay. Not happening.
Chris Mack at Xavier. Is he better off staying put or taking the Louisville job?
He's a Xavier alum. But if Louisville's going to throw $4 million a year at him, his wife is from Louisville. So, I mean, I could see it going both ways. He's going to interview this week. He's going to sit down with the Louisville people, I think, tomorrow. That's a tough call. Like, maybe you've maxed it out at Xavier. And that's the rationalization he would use. You know what? We've done all we could at Xavier. We were a number one seed. We're one of the best teams in the Big East. Maybe it's time to go.
Pittsburgh job is open. I thought about this earlier today. Ben Howland, he built the program into what it was.
Yeah, where did you come up with that?
Because he did.
Oh, absolutely.
Pittsburgh basketball was irrelevant for a long time before Ben Howland took over. He's at Mississippi State now. They've won 25 games this year. If you're Pitt, do you make that call? Do you try to get him back?
No, because here's the thing. How did Ben Howland build the Pittsburgh program? What type of player did he get to build Pittsburgh into what it was, moving from Fitzgerald Fieldhouse into a 12,000-seat arena? He did it selling the Big East, like we talked about with Connecticut, mm-hmm. and selling New York City players come to Pittsburgh.
I didn't even think about New York. I just thought some good guards and some physical
it
guys.
It was a lot, but it was a lot of New York guys with New York connections come to Pittsburgh. Well, you can go back to New York. You can play against St. John's, which may not have recruited you, and you can play in Madison Square Garden. We talked about Connecticut. There was a time when Connecticut was the Big East. There was a time when Pittsburgh owned New York City, and a lot of that went away when Pittsburgh said, you know what, we're going to chase the almighty college football dollar, and we're going to get away from our roots in the Big East and go to the ACC. That move, the whole conference affiliation, if that hurt Connecticut and Cincinnati from that standpoint, that hurt Pittsburgh from the standpoint where it's just not a fit in the ACC. And how do you sell Pittsburgh as your program playing in the ACC where you could have sold it playing in the Big East?
Okay, real quick.
You keep saying real quick.
This is we got about 30 seconds. Mike Bray, do you think he'd like to just go back to Maui right now and unwind after everything that happened this season?
I think Mike Bray this week went someplace really warm and just sat on a beach somewhere. and will do that for as much time as he's able to do before the recruiting period starts and then the summer program starts and then the foreign tour starts. But he's decompressing in the only way that Mike Bray can.
All right. He's Tom Noy, South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame basketball insider. I'm Sean Steyers. Darren Pritchett had the call of Notre Dame hockey earlier tonight. They beat Michigan Tech. They advance, and they will play in the regional championship tomorrow against either Providence or Clarkson to try to get back to the Frozen Four. Budweiser's weekday sports beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We've got Westwood One's coverage of March Madness coming up in about 2.5 minutes here tonight. Kansas and Clemson tip it off at 7:07. For Tom Noy, I'm Sean Stiers.
But we're done?
Weekday Sports Beat. That is it, man. 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports leader.